You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Gambit, Part 1. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
James from London. How you doing, buddy?
All good. It is the very last weekend of November, end of December, and this morning we put up our Christmas tree.
Did you? I haven't done it yet. Okay.
Well, we basically got the kids to do it. And we needed to clean out the garage, which is where the Christmas tree is. So it was more of a cleaning out the garage thing than the Christmas tree. But we have lights coming. We've actually ordered outside lights for the first time in our lives. Because the wife says it's a bit miserable at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, so we've been doing this show for a few years now, and I still love it when you say new words like garage, because we call it the garage, not garage. And let's say you got really sick. Let's say you and I both got really sick at the same exact moment, and we needed medical attention right now. Yep. I would get an ambulance ride to the hospital, and you would get an ambulance ride to hospital. It's the word "the" that Americans put in before hospital that you guys don't do. You just go to hospital. Or, I was in hospital the other day.
Well, I mean, both are acceptable, right?
Right.
It's certainly true that we're allowed to drop it. So you can go to school. You don't have to go to the school, and you can go to hospital. And it's not the hospital either. But if you say, I was at the hospital the other day, that's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, that's understandable. And
except the one things like church and stuff. You go to church. You don't go to the church.
Correct. You're right. We don't go to the church. We just go to church. You're right. But one thing I also notice is that sometimes I start using English words, whether I'm even aware of it or not. And so if I was to say, dang, she's got a nice bum, people will look at me and go, what? They'll get an idea of what I'm saying. But I now use the word bum when I've never used the word bum before. So, hey, you're changing me a little at a time. Is that the plan here?
It is. It's cultural appropriation over like a 7-year Star Trek review cycle.
There you go.
That's exactly the plan.
That's going to work. Yeah. So I'm even getting better at roundabouts that I usually hate. But, what do you call them? Roundabouts?
Roundabouts. That's such a curly-whirly word that it's clearly an English word, right? I don't know. If it was American, sure, it'd be called something like traffic circle or something more aggressive than roundabout.
Right.
But maybe I'm just being prejudiced there.
Yeah. And let's not forget, we did talk a couple of 2-3 episodes back about roundabouts here versus roundabouts there, and you sent me that insane picture.
So like the roundabouts of roundabouts, yeah.
Yes, even the roundabouts of roundabouts had multiple roundabouts, and that's insane. Looking at all those lines and thinking, there's no way. Do you know what would happen here if we had that? We'd have multiple collisions every day. And while the police were investigating those collisions, there'd be more hitting the police cars and everywhere else. Yeah, that would absolutely be insane.
So So I'm keeping track of the automated driving stuff that is really been piloted in the US, and I know that I mean, is it Waymo that have the stuff in Phoenix, and you know, Tesla are obviously rolling out their stuff. And at the back of my mind, I think, yeah, this is all very, very cute, but you wait until you hit a roundabout of roundabouts, and your software better be good enough, because we've got some crazy stuff here in the UK.
Really? Really? You there? Uh-oh.
I'm here.
Oh, my
you're
call.
You're coming through weird. Oh, no, you're okay now.
Oh, good. Yeah, my call was really bizarre, and Skype recorder just made a ugly noise to me too.
No, I think you're good now. Anywho, what are we here for today?
How about Gambit Part 1?
Awesome.
Okay. Well then, we'll talk about it. Let's see here. This is the seventh, correction. This is the fourth episode of Season 7 of Star Trek The Next Generation. First aired on October 11th, 1993. It was teleplayed by Naren...
My son is now older than I was at the time.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah. That's fascinating. Teleplayed by Naren Shankar. Story by... same Naren and Christopher Hatton, H-A-T-T-O-N. I suck at names. Directed by Peter Livingston. Maybe I can edit this part out. Teleplay and story by Naren Shankar and Christopher Halton, or Hatton. Directed by Peter Lauritsen. So, guest stars for tonight's episode include Richard Lynch as Arctis Baron, Robin Curtis as Tellera. Robin Curtis, huh?
Yes, Stavik is back.
Okay. Caitlin Brown as Vakor, Cameron Thor as Narek, Alan Altschuld as Ranark, Bruce Gray as, believe it or not, a different spelling, but Chakotay. C-H-E-K-O-T-E. Chakotay. Doesn't look Admiral Indian Chakotay. To me. Admiral Chakotay. Different spelling, though. Okay. Co-starring Sabrina LaBeouf as Giusti. Stephen Lee as Bartender. Sweet. I can finally say one. Derek Webster as Sanders. And... well, that looks like that is it. There was no computer voice today? That's sad. Well, there is Baron's mercenary vessel computer voice. Yeah, okay. So, anyway, what do we think about Gambit Part 1?
It sounds like you didn't enjoy the names of the guest stars this week. Okay. So, I have a bit of an issue with this episode. And the issue that I have... no! Okay, so here's the thing. The issue that I have is that I know that people don't like this. And I don't understand why. This is good. This is fun. This is... it's clear nonsense, right? But isn't this like a bit of a guilty pleasure? Like, you know, Picard's undercover and they've also got Riker undercover, and Data's now captain, and they're running after an artifact. It's a bit like a, you know, you remember the episode in season six, where they had, you know, that the chase. This is just like the chase on steroids with, you know, with the A-team. This is fun, isn't it? I'm not saying it's a great episode at all, but isn't it at least fun?
Not up until the reveal.
What
not
reveal?
Up until the reveal. When
there's Riker, a reveal?
There's a reveal. When Riker is on the ship and all of a sudden he hears Picard's voice behind him. Yeah, okay. There's that reveal.
Did you really think that Picard was dead?
I mean, no, of course maybe? Not. No. Of course not. We knew he was alive.
Mm-hmm. You know,
but still, what I'm saying is that it was just kind of pretty dull. Like the barroom scene, you know, Deanna's looking for somebody because he owes her money. And then, of course, Wrecker, you know, makes his entrance as well. And this poor alien that's trying to, you know, explain that I know nothing. I don't know. Something about the bar scene just...
Okay, by the way, just to be clear, I think the bar scene is terrible, right? Okay. So let's just assume that in continuity, you have to figure out where Picard was. You send down Troy, you send down Worf, you send down Crusher, and you send down Riker to all hang around one bar. I mean, what are you talking about? You know, you send one guy down, and you give him 2 hours, and then if he doesn't know anything or doesn't find anything, you send someone down the following day. You would never have... Why would you ever send down four people? It's like, you know, all of a sudden, you're like doubling the capacity of the pub, and you've got all of these weird aliens. And also, on the grounds that Troy, Crusher, and Riker all look human, and I appreciate that Troy is not, again, it's pretty unlikely for there to be like three humans just turn up all of a sudden. You know, well kept in nice clothes. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very suspicious, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of found that scene to be a bit, you know, I don't know. It wasn't certainly not the greatest scene in the world, and it's not entirely clear what they're trying to. What are they trying to do here, right? So I think that had they the, you know, we obviously know what happened, right? We know that Picard got phased and he vaporized. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe why wouldn't they have shown that? You know, show that on, you know, CCTV or something. Have the TNG crew turn up and to be shown that this is what's happened so that there's evidence in front of you. I don't think there's any reason for them to have this little bit of a mystery interrogation for the first, like, for the teaser. Although I do have to say, I do like the guy that, you know, the snitch, right? I like mm-hmm. him. And I like the fact that later on, Riker says, are you wanted by the Klingons? And he's like, no, put me in the Federation internment camp, please. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be sent to the Klingons.
Yeah, exactly. That is so true. I don't want to be sent to the Klingons either. I don't know. What would be worse, the Klingons or Cardassians?
I think Klingons would be.
Yeah, okay.
Because the thing is, I think the Kardashians, fundamentally, they have a they have like a rational thought. They might consider you as you know, as someone that needs to do work, and they'll be pretty very logical in it. Whereas the Klingons, it's like, hell, you know, if you're there for sport, or look, I don't ever want to be around people who are prepared to kill me. In an honorable sense. So I would always stay clear of the Klingons.
Okay. So what do you think of the cover story, though, about how the man they're looking for impregnated Riker's sister?
It's ridiculous, right? It's in fact, I'm not even sure whether it... I mean, does it age particularly well? You know, like, There are cultural things these days where you'd probably raise a few more eyebrows at this idea that, especially when Riker is saying, you know, that, or, you know, this person deflowered my sister and I'm really, really angry about it. So, you know, it must have been done for laughs at the time, I suppose. And I just don't think they didn't need to go there. I don't think it added much, right? I mean, you know, why didn't Worf say, oh, you know, it's Riker's looking for Picard because, you know, they're very, you know, very jealous gay lovers.
I guess so. Well, either way, 4 to 5 bars of Gold Press Latinum will get them in the information they look for.
Is that... That doesn't sound like a lot, though. I mean, actually, maybe it is. Maybe it's plenty. I do like the fact he starts complaining about luxury when he's on the Enterprise. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, well, let's convert it to pound. How many pound would one bar of Gold Press Latinum be? It's not an equal one for one, I assume.
No, but I actually can't remember how much a bar of Gold Press Latinum is in general. Because also, they do have bricks of Latinum as well, right? So mm-hmm. a bar is less than a brick, but obviously more than a strip and a slip. If I could have my DS9.
You got it right. Slips, strips, bars, bricks. And Admiral Chakotay. Really. Because, I mean, obviously we know he's not Chakotay's father. He doesn't look like him. He just looks like your average American guy. But anyway.
Okay, so hang on. Let me just, I'm going to just step in here and suggest that you do appreciate that the Native Americans are your average American guys.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Not suggesting otherwise.
That is so true. But anyway, so the alien helps Wrecker find the guys who killed Picard. And as the average firefight begins and ends, why does the bad guy always get away?
So we're talking about the ship, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or you talk about when they go down to the planet,
the mercenaries. They finally meet up with these mercenaries that killed Picard, and they always get away.
Do they find the ship first, or do they find the, or do they? I thought they went down to the planet first, right? So there's the phaser fight,
right?
Where
right.
Riker gets abducted. Which, yeah. By the way, there's a scene in there where they are literally standing maybe 10 feet away from each other, and they're firing their phasers at each other, and no one's hitting anyone. I mean, except the first dude that gets killed. It's like, you know, I'm 15 paces away from you, but I can't hit you. And if you look, I think it's in front of Geordi. If you look at the, it was even Geordi there, but in front of someone, there is like basically a wall of rocks. And the wall of rocks, they do not look stable enough to withstand like a strong wind, let alone a phaser fight.
Yeah, right.
Fight. And it's like, you know, it just tickled me that these pebbles that are barely moving, but are apparently absorbing these lethal phasers. That was a bit, well, okay, talking about English isms, that was a bit naff. So I don't know if you guys have the word naff in a
naff.
Naff. It's a bit cheap and a bit not particularly, naff is the opposite of impressive, in a sense at least.
Okay. You know, the typical phasers, they only fire one beam and that's it, right? So
yeah.
Why don't they come up with phasers that would be a continual stream as you just swing it back and forth? And you're going to bound to hit somebody, right? Instead of trying to aim fire, keep a nice steady stream and just sweep it back and forth till you finally hit something.
Okay, so the only thing I could imagine is that the phaser itself would get hot.
After a while, I suppose, yeah.
But no, you're absolutely right. You know, the idea that you should also be able to like use a phaser as like a targeting beam, right? So you might have like a low-level phaser as you sweep it, but as soon as it touches someone, it could know that you then want to push some more energy that way. Basically have two beams. A radar beam and stuff. But no, you're right. You're right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what do you think about the fight between Riker and Deanna about seeking revenge on who killed Picard?
Okay. I think this is good. I think this is really good because I think Riker's in the wrong. And Riker's going around saying, oh, I'm going to be angry about this. And Troy is completely right that he has responsibility to the crew and he is not just allowed to sit there and sulk, which is what Riker's doing.
Right.
And it's okay for someone, you know, it's okay for like Wesley to sulk, but it's not okay for the first officer and the presumed captain to sulk. And he has to... He absolutely has to be up there, given the eulogy, and be at the, you know, be a spearhead for people to feel that it's okay and things have moved on. So you know, in this episode, Troy is great. This is exactly what Troy would need to do or need to say.
Yeah, I agree. But of course, a higher ranking person always has to have the last thing, last say. That's enough! Get out! Okay, well, that means I lost, but I want you to leave.
Yeah, he's wrong. He's wrong.
Right.
So, and anyway, this isn't the first time that Picard's died, right? So he's, you know, Riker's, he knows what he needs to do in these circumstances. And I can just about appreciate that, oh, crikey, you know, Picard died in a bar fight. Isn't that terrible? But is it really much worse, like, you know, on an emotional level for Riker than when he was killed by the Borg or when he was, you know, presumed dead in countless other situations? I just don't see why Riker has it, you know, he doesn't seem to be written in the same way he was written in, for example, Best of Both Worlds. And I appreciate that you're under a lot of pressure in those and different circumstances. But to me, I thought they did Riker maybe a little bit of disservice here.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Just remember the last time he died, how he handled it. So, but do you think it makes sense that Admiral Chakotay would, you know, tell me your plan? What do you want to do? Oh, we're going to go chase these bastards down. Hmm. All right. So we'll take you out of rotation. Go ahead. Take your time.
Yeah, I appreciated that because, well, first of all, this might be like the first nice admiral from Starfleet, right? Oh, right. This might be the first one. And I think that in these circumstances, I think an admiral would be aware enough and not be so kind of blinded behind... ended behind like the desk to see that actually it's worthwhile for the crew to take a bit of time to process. And the one thing that the Riker didn't say, you know, he said, look, we want to investigate this. And they said, well, the authorities are investigating. He said, well, we don't trust the authorities. But the real, the next come up on that after, well, are you sure you're the right guys, is really, well, we're here. We're here. We're here now. And we can do this now. You can't wait for another ship to turn up to investigate in 6 weeks' time. You need to have this done now whilst it's still fresh. So I thought that it was completely appropriate for them to investigate. And I thought that, you know, Riker did not even have to play his trump card, which is, what are you going to do? Wait for 6 weeks and have things, you know, have the evidence disappear or evaporate? No, it's you should do it now, and you should do it with the Enterprise.
Yeah, right. All right. So the guy points out Barada 3. Let's go check it. Like you said, that's right. I forgot that part. I watched the episode last week. I should have rewatched it today. But anyway, yes, I remember now. They go to Barada 3. They have a firefight where nobody hits each other. Except for the one guy. And we don't know if he's dead or if he's just stunned. Because, well, you know. The Federation, they always have their faces on stun, but the bad guys, hey, they're always on kill. So, they're just not as nice as us. But the bad guys get away. They beam to their ship, and Data goes in pursuit and loses them. How the hell?
Yep.
I mean, what kind of technology do these people have that the Enterprise couldn't keep up with?
Yeah, it's actually in this couple of scenes where Data's in charge, Data's not behaving well. So his con or the guy at Ops, we know whichever one it is, ends up telling him things like, and Data doesn't react properly. So I'll give you an example. The one that's clearest in my mind is that someone at Ops says, "Oh, there's a ship approaching," and instead of Data saying, "Move to intersect, put a tractor beam on, make sure they then get away, whatever you want to do," he says, "Why didn't we see it before?" And he's like, "Does that matter? Why does that matter? It doesn't matter at the moment." And then Ops straight away says, "Yeah, probably been, you know, probably hidden behind the planet." And it's like, well, if that's true, then you should have said, "Oh, there's a ship here, was probably hidden behind the planet." You know, you don't need Data to have to interrogate you to have that information. And At the same time, Data should not be wasting his time interrogating this woman about the information. And he does it again, right. Like, you know, as the ship goes into quote-unquote cloak, instead of saying, like, oh, we need to do this, he gets into a little mini argument or a mini debate. And you think, look, Data, you're not efficiently using your time here. You need to be on point, and you're just you're dumping exposition on the screen. So stop, be in command, and just do better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yet I was actually thinking about why would the Enterprise lose the ship? But now we know what we know. At the time we're watching this for the first run, we don't know what's actually on that ship, right? So we don't have Picard posing as Galen, who probably used his knowledge of how to evade the Enterprise to evade the Enterprise. And that's why Data would be so confused as to how is this even possible? Because he has no idea Picard's on that ship. Nobody does at that time. Makes mm-hmm. sense? Could that be?
Actually, that's possible. I hadn't considered that, but that's certainly possible.
Okay. So the bad guy gets away. But in the meantime, they did abduct Riker.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it was just to interrogate him on Federation, what they know, or?
I don't know. It seems odd that they took him, but I mean, yeah, they did say that they're going to use him as a hostage, I suppose. So, you know, maybe they've done that before with other people, and they've had success. I do find it odd that. Actually, it's not odd. I'm not going to criticize it for being odd. I like the fact that this episode, you lose Picard and you lose Riker. And I can't remember another case where you lose both in the command. So there are cases where you might lose one or the other. Yeah. But I like it when you lose both, because it does kind of cut the head off, right? So you have Data in charge, but Data doesn't have a huge amount of experience or, you know, the depth necessary to be making these calls. So I like the fact that it almost... it reminds me of the situation where Crusher was in charge in Descent. I like it when the situation forces people lower down the ranks to have to step up.
Okay, wow. Yeah, she was pretty good with this one. But, okay, so they beam him up, but they abduct him, where he eventually finds Picard. Wow. Do you think maybe he kind of telegraphed his surprise just a little bit too much when the reveal happened?
Well, you know, you kind of don't... So obviously everyone recognizes Patrick Stewart's voice, per se. But the thing I never, you know, the thing I think is a bit over the top is the fact that it seems like from Riker's perspective, he's standing on the ship, he's listening to all of these people are jumping in, and then at the last moment it's like, oh, that guy in the chair that you hadn't noticed across the room turns around. And if you think about being in that room, surely you would have noticed Picard, and surely you would have seen who he was, even, you know, even based on stature alone, right? You don't have to see his face, you know the shape of the guy, you know his head, yeah. you know how the light reflects off the top of his skull. So I'm kind of, I think it's not realistic that Riker wouldn't have seen him.
But, you know, let's assume he was ducked in his chair and Riker didn't quite see his head. That's fine.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when he has a big reveal and he says, I think we should just kill him now. And Riker turns around and he has this, oh, there you are, look on his face. I'm surprised the guy didn't pick it up. Because you got to figure that mercenary captain was pretty smart.
Well, I mean, but all evidence points us to the contrary, right? he's been entrusted with this mission, which we're really not clear as to what's going on. He has a ship. He has prisoners that he's keeping under his control. Apparently, he doesn't pay very good money, so he needs to connect people with the pain chip.
So
I think that he I don't think, at least in part one, I can't remember part two because I haven't seen it in a long time, but in part one, I'm not left with the impression that this guy is particularly clever or ruthless or kind of a menace, right? So I kind of feel that from the moment he's introduced, the crew is against him, or, you know, he's, from the moment he's introduced, you know, it's clear that he doesn't have the loyalty of the crew, and it's clear that Picard is, you know, pushing him back at his authority. And then he also mentions the fact that there was a previous captain that he managed to usurp. So it gives you the impression that the this isn't like an iron-tight grip that someone has had on this crew and for, you know, for decades, and you're not going to be able to get between them. You get the distinct impression that this is a crew that can very easily fall out and, you know, fall to pieces. And as a result, I never felt that the captain was really much of a menace, right? I don't believe that any of the people on the bridge would die for him or would follow orders without question. So as a result, I felt that he was a bit of a he was quite a weak authority figure.
You know, speaking of that pain device, I was actually wondering, how does it know?
Where do you get them from?
Well, where do you get them? Yeah. Where do you get them, and how can we put them on our children? But anyway, I mean, how does this pain device know who to give pain to? I mean, all it does is he presses the same button, and the right one automatically makes the right person hurt.
So there must be some kind of person selection wheel on his thing. But you make a good point that if he's like accidentally got on the wrong person and he presses it and 4 or 5 meters behind him, some guy goes,
"Oh, sorry about that." Or, I mean, you know, let's say he's got a wrong girlfriend guy on ship. Yeah, he's got a girlfriend on ship. Does he put one of those on her? Oh, sorry about that. I meant to do him. Oh, sorry, I meant her. Ooh. Yeah, so. Or does he have one on his own neck? His hair's too long. I don't think I ever really noticed whether he would have one on his own neck or not.
You wouldn't. Okay, so. Let's just assume for a second that I'm this evil overlord that keeps pain chips in my kind of a crew to keep them in line. I'm not putting one in myself just in case. So I hope he hasn't got one.
Well, if he's the one that implemented this whole pain thing, maybe it was his predecessor who did it. Then he would have to get his taken off.
Yeah, I mean, it almost suggests that it was his predecessor, though, right? I thought there was like a throwaway line that suggested that.
Yeah, I think so. But, okay, so I do like, okay, so one of the things I did like about the episode was Picard and Riker working together when no one had a clue that they were working together. And it makes perfect sense that Picard is trying to get this guy to mistrust him, but hey, you know, Riker, he's a pretty bad Starfleet officer. Nobody likes him, so he probably would make a good mercenary. So he gives Riker every opportunity to save the ship and save the day and fix the situation. That was pretty damn good, actually.
Yeah, that was good. That was clever. I do have a couple of questions here, though, because how famous is Picard and Riker in the Star Trek universe? Because should we not expect them to be famous enough that if Picard walks in, most people then go, "Oh, there's Picard." I mean, should he not be that kind of famous? You're not going to get, you know, look, if I'm going about my business and I've got like a nefarious kind of an enterprise going on where I'm trying to rob a bank and, you know, I don't know, you know, like the president of the United States walks in and says, "Yeah, can I be part of the crew?" No one's going to go, "Sure." I mean, you gotta know who the dude is, right? So would people not be aware of the captain of the Enterprise? And maybe as soon as you get Riker, who says, "Oh, I'm Riker, and I'm, you know, I was on the Enterprise," Does no one Google Riker and then see that his senior officer looks a lot like the guy that's sitting next to you?
Yeah, well, no. Yes, I do see what you're saying, but I can see the other side of that as well, and I'll give you an example. Back before Barack Obama became president, the news people would go out to the community, and, his running mate was Biden, right, who now is going to be president in a month and a half. But the point is, they would walk around to people who identified themselves as Democrats and ask, what do you think about a administration under President Obama? And they would praise his glory, right? And then they would say, well, what about his running mate, Sarah Palin? Do you think that she will be able to stand up to the Republicans? And as it turns out, she is a Republican. And a lot of people would say, absolutely. I think she's going to be a great vice president because she's going to be tough and strong, just like Obama is. And so these people really have no idea what they're talking about. They're just there to talk on TV. And, you know, I think it's kind of funny. And, of course, they do it in reverse. They find Republicans who are equally as stupid as well. But the point is, you think, yes, everybody's seen Riker, everybody's seen Picard. Picard was Locutus of Borg, and Riker saved mankind how many times by now? So he should have his picture everywhere. But no, there's still going to be people who have no idea because they're clueless as to events or who people are.
Okay. Let's just assume for a second I buy that. Now, if I'm on the ship, right, and what are there? Are there five aliens on the ship, and they're all different species? Have I got that right? So yes. They're sitting there, and I think, okay, we've all got, you know, a weird mix of people, and then a human turns up, and then 2 weeks later, another human turns up. Is no one sitting there thinking, blimey, where did all these humans come from? I mean, even on a prejudicial level, you must be thinking, there are an awful lot of humans around here.
We didn't see any until a few weeks ago.
Never seen a human in 15 years, and now all of a sudden there are two of them.
Yeah.
I think they're multiplying. Yeah,
exactly. You would even think the Romulan on the ship probably would have a better idea. Well, hold on a minute. That's a questionable one. Because as I look at Memory Alpha, it actually says Vashar. You know, played by Robin Curtis, was a Vulcan pretending to be a Romulan. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading that wrong. But if she, Talara was an alias used by T'Pol, a member of the Vulcan isolationist movement. Surely she would know who Picard is. Or Riker. Especially. Wait a minute. The Vulcan isolationist movement. Is there any chance that she would have come in contact with both of them during the time of Spock and his, you know, reunification time?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's been a while, so maybe not.
Oh, by the way, I don't know, you're probably not watching Discovery at the moment, but I did watch Discovery this week, and it is, they've got another Vulcan / Romulan episode. So, not entirely sure how I feel about it, because I think it's a bit, they are going back to the, so basically, you get to see reunified Vulcan with the Romulans having come home in the 29th century, or whenever Discovery is now set.
Yeah. Basically, I've been reading that Star Trek Discovery is pretty much circumcising canon like crazy.
Okay.
No.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Did you really mean to use the word circumcising in that sentence?
Kind of. Yeah. It's ripping canon's foreskin off. You know, what are you gonna do? So,
yeah, honestly, just so that we're clear, I really needed that That sight in my mind's eye, yes.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Yeah, does Lou know what that word really means? Maybe, yeah. Maybe not, I don't know. We'll see. But no, I've watched so far the first one.
Okay,
and cool. And Michael Burnham on this...
The first
on
one's this, good.
The first one sucks. Okay, halfway through I shut it off, said no. I mean, she's laughing like crazy. She's on a beach with objects around her. And I think the problem is it was showing what happened previously on Star Trek Discovery. And some of those things I don't recall. So maybe, maybe I missed a couple episodes from the previous season and I should probably go back and redo them all. Or redo at least.
I don't think you did.
Really?
Yeah, no, I don't think you did miss it. Because it's really like the final like 3 or 4 minutes of season two that kind of gets stretched into, the new setting of season three. But anyway, this isn't a Hate Discovery podcast, I don't think. I do have to say, I think that there's a couple of good, there's at least one good Trekkie episode in Discovery season three so far, I think. But there is just excuse me as an old man that's, you know, out of touch with the current world and whatever. I found that the introduction of the new crew members this season to be painful. I mean, I think Discovery has a problem with some of the crew not being likable. And I'm going to put it, to put it mildly, I don't think that all of the characters are particularly likable. And that's not to say that you can't have, unlikable characters, but I've always felt that the majority of the crew, you kind of like them as people. And I don't think that that's true necessarily of Discovery. And there are a couple of that are good, but yeah, there's too much that's people that I would not necessarily enjoy spending this company with. But yeah, there's an introduction of a new main character that I found tedious. And frankly, I'm going to be really rude here, because I don't like the Trill, and I don't even like Dax. So there you go, I've said it. It's I think the best Dax was Ezri, and that clearly goes against any suggestion that I'm a proper Star Trek fan. But I find the Trill tiring, and the Trill character that's been introduced is not anything that I'm particularly impressed by. Anyway, moving on.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can think of one character in particular you're probably talking about, the bubbly little girl with the long frizzly hair. She's kind of an annoyance in the series more than actually doing anything significant. But one thing I do like...
You're talking about what? You're talking about the red hair. You're talking about Tilly, right?
Yeah,
I actually don't particularly mind Tilly. I thought Tilly is... No. There's... So on the list of my how do I feel about Discovery characters, Tilly's probably third best. There are way worse depths than Tilly. By the way, there is Tilly news this week in that she got promoted this week. In
the Discovery.
She got
spoiler alert. Really?
Wait and see. Yeah.
Promoted. I will look for that one. I can't imagine what she would be qualified for yet. I mean, okay. Well,
she's only an ensign.
Okay. Cool. All right. So one thing that I have noticed in the season four, is it?
Of what? Discovery.
Discovery. Or is it season three?
Season three.
Season three, okay, sorry.
They disappeared for a year. I don't know what actually happened. I wasn't following the behind-the-scenes stuff, but they have disappeared for like 18 months between seasons. I don't know what that is, and I imagine, given the pandemic this year...
Yeah.
No, it would have been pre-COVID, so they disappeared for 18 months, and I imagine that they're going to be disappearing for another 18 months, given COVID's probably taken out a lot of the you know, a lot of people's ability to do stuff, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, it is definitely. So one of the things I was in the beginning so proud about, I don't know about proud, but, you know, and it's kind of strange for a straight guy to be talking about gay characters and how they should. I was glad that they were, this couple was part of the series, and what did they do? And they yank one of them, they kill him off. And I think, you know, Star Trek had the balls to actually do it, but then all of a sudden they got neutered really bad. And it was terrible that they did it. I'm glad they had, I don't know if they had planned it that way. Did they plan to bring Culber back? Or was it a fan backlash that they conceded to? But I'm glad they put the two back together. So,
but, but they're not back together romantically, right?
Well, sort of they are. Yeah.
Well, the things actually I do like, first of all, I do like them as characters. I think that Stamets in particular is probably the best thing about Discovery. I actually think that it's a good idea. They started as a relationship, then they got broken away.
Yeah.
And I actually think that it's better that they get broken up. And, you know, there is this thing about, well, it's technically not the same person. They've gone through a lot. I think it's better for them to have broken up because it gives you more storytelling opportunities. Mm. But at the same time, you obviously know the history. So you know that, you know, you know that they're a gay couple. So right. I kind of feel that it was good that they started as a couple and then got split. And I think that's the best position for them to be in. Now, if they reunite in season 7 or whatever, yeah, knock yourselves out. But similar to the way that Troy and Riker worked, which is that we're going to acknowledge that there is history, but we're not going to prevent, you know, we're not. It's not going to be like a boyfriend-girlfriend kind of storyline each and every week. And I think sometimes if you have relationships that are romantic, then you only write for those relationships. You don't write for anything more. You know, it limits the character, is probably what I think I'm saying here, when you are too closely tied with other people. But no, yeah. I think that they're a great couple.
They were. I mean, they actually are. And quite honestly, you know, leaving that aside, I happen to think Culber is one hell of a physician. You know, he's got such empathy and a sweetness about him when he's taking care of patients. You know, I don't know what this, you know, I haven't gotten far enough to see where this, I don't know what I call it, alternate universe Culber is about. So I can't really speculate on what kind of doctor he will be. But before they killed him off, I always thought he was one hell of a doctor.
And they shouldn't have killed him off.
They should not have.
No, it's up there in terms of senseless deaths with Tasha Yar, right?
Yeah, definitely.
It's you know, the character that killed him off was, you know, yawn invoking. You know, I had no time for the storyline of the, you know, was it a Klingon that was in a human body kind of nonsense. And I just didn't see any reason why I should be invested in that. And I thought it was a little bit cheap that that you required the character to do this in the life of the Discovery crew in order to stay. It almost felt like they were doing it in order to stay relevant, right? So I didn't think, you know, that the Vok character stood up on his own. So you have him run around the crew murdering people. Oh, okay, great. That does nothing for me, thanks.
No. It didn't me either. Okay, so let's go back to Gambit. Mm-hmm. Explain something to me, because I'm not sure I really understood it. What is Galen, a.k.a. Picard, analyzing all these relics for? What is he looking for?
So he's been told to look for something, but in a conversation later on in the episode, he says that he doesn't know what he's looking for, or he doesn't know exactly what the thing is. So it sounds like he's trying to carbon date the thing, frankly. He's trying to just make sure that it's the thing of the right time or the right place or the right chemical or quantum composition or whatever it happens to be. I mean, he doesn't know what he's looking for, but he knows it well enough that he's improved the accuracy by a factor of 10, which to me, I felt that was like almost contradictory, but hey, you know, I'm not going to nitpick.
Right. Is carbon dating a real thing?
Yeah, of course carbon dating's a real thing.
I guess I don't really understand it. I mean, how can we tell how old something mm-hmm. is by carbon dating?
Okay, so you can't tell how old something is by carbon dating. You can tell how long ago things were alive.
Mm.
So the whole point is that so you have carbon-12 in the atmosphere. So carbon-12 is the normal carbon that exists, and that is what it is. So carbon-12 is – all of carbon is carbon-12.
Okay.
In the atmosphere, some of the carbon in carbon dioxide will be carbon-13. So I believe it's due to the sun irradiating the gases or irradiating is not the right word. But, you know, there is a certain level of carbon-13 that enters into your body and you use to build yourself up as you're taking in carbon dioxide. So whilst you're alive, you are building up your carbon-13 reserves. Now, the thing about it is that the carbon-13 level is always, it always is at the same level and it is kept constant. And it's kept constant because it's basically a function of how much radiation we're getting from the sun.
Okay.
So at any given point, these carbon-13s decay, but the level that there is in the system, the level there is in the Earth, kind of remains at the same level because that constantly being regenerated by the sun. Now, so this basically means is that anyone that is alive and has been that has grown has a certain percentage of carbon-13 in themselves. When they die, they stop adding the carbon-13 to themselves because they stop growing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the carbon-13 isotope starts to decay. And people know how long it will take for the carbon-13 in your remains to drop down to carbon-12. So it basically, you know, everyone, whilst they're alive, has, for the sake of argument, 5% carbon-13. And as soon as they die, you basically start a stopwatch that will halve that number every, I don't know, 70,000 years or whatever the number happens to be. So they, you know, basically by looking at the carbon composition of any remain, you can basically tell how long it's been alive, how long ago it died.
Hmm.
Well, that's my understanding of it. I'm not a specialist, but it does work. Now, quantum dating, which is what they introduced in Enterprise. I'm not convinced that works.
Okay, well. That's fine. Okay, so Wrecker's trying to convince this lieutenant on a starbase to lower your shields. I'd like to send some security down, because obviously he's trying to pretend like he's a mercenary, I guess. And it doesn't work. So what happens?
By the way, I'm really sorry here. The carbon dating doesn't use carbon-13. It uses carbon-14. We're going to get letters if I don't correct myself, because after I said all of that, I just quickly checked whether or not I'm talking complete and utter nonsense. And it's the carbon-14 isotope that is used, but it's the same thing. It's the rate of 14 versus the 12. The 12 is the abundant one, but apparently 13 is too stable to provide radio dating from. Anyway, apologies, Lou. What did you say?
I was just thinking that Wrecker was trying to get this Starbase lieutenant to drop his shield so we could send some security down, but
okay, that obviously sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah, well, they were trying to steal artifacts.
Lieutenant, drop your shields. We're here to take the artifacts.
Yes. Okay.
But, actually, by the way, do you have a problem? So thinking about why people don't like this episode, do you have a problem with the fact that they're chasing artifacts? So if it wasn't, if it, you know, in a way, Star Trek's set in the future, and this is a bit of a, like, fuzzy-duzzy, old-timey kind of a magic crystal that they're looking for. Do you think it's to do with the fact that they're looking for artifacts that makes people dislike this? If they were looking for, you know, I don't know, like technology or, you know, dilithium or something like that, would it be better? Is it the fact that they're looking for quote unquote artifacts that makes it a bit iffy this episode?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know. It could be, but I mean, this wasn't the chase. Definitely not.
Yeah. I find it interesting. I find the fact that they go to the place and they're trying to pressure the guy to drop his shields. By the way, does the shield go all around the planet? Is that the suggestion here?
I would say no. Probably just the base itself.
but then, does the shield go around where the artifact is? I suppose it must do, right?
Oh, yeah, because the artifact is probably in the base.
Okay, it's in the base. Well, it seems a bit odd that there's a Starfleet base, you know, and it has its own museum. I don't know. Does it have its own like cafeteria and you know, visitor center as well?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, obviously they want to beam these artifacts up, but they're having trouble locking onto them because, you know, they're able to get their base back up. So why don't we destroy the base itself? Hey, it'd be the easiest thing to do until the Enterprise shows up.
But one thing about it is that if you're like a criminal gang and you've been told that, you know, I need you to go and steal these artifacts and check that they're correct, check them for something. You know, there's a certain amount of criminality that's involved in that. So if I were today to say, look, you need to go into these, you know, universities and these museums to steal artifacts, then there's a certain like maximum, you know, sentence that I'm going to receive by having done that. Mm-hmm. If you then say, well, you know, there's a security guard outside the museum, so let's kill him and blow the security guard station up.
Yeah.
That kind of increases the sentence somewhat. So why wouldn't they be as like cautious and careful as possible? They're being quite blasé with their blowing up the base, right?
Right. You're right. But anyway, it doesn't matter because the Enterprise shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the Enterprise. And what happens when Data hails the ship? Riker comes on screen. Hi, Commander. What's going on? Yeah.
Okay, Data. So are we expecting... Okay, so Riker tells Data to do something. We know that Riker's first officer.
Mm-hmm.
So from the view of the crew... on the, you know, the scoundrels, surely they must be aware that on the Enterprise there's a captain, right?
Yeah.
So who would outrank Riker? So why would Riker be able to tell the Enterprise what to do when he's not captain?
That is a good point. I don't know. No, either way, you know, Data knows. Well, Data assumes Riker has to know as soon as he was kidnapped, his command codes were useless, but yet. So I like the fact that, do you think it's actually plausible for Data to play along like this?
Yeah. I'm going to say yeah because I enjoy it. So
okay, I do too, but still. I mean, really, would a computer think that, though?
I don't know, and I like the fact that Data does play along, and he doesn't do the Riker. Why are you trying to be deceitful towards me? So you should be, you know. I like the fact that Data doesn't blow his cover, I suppose, and is able to cotton on to the fact that you shouldn't blow his cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, Commander, they kidnapped you. Why are you now trying to help them? This makes no sense to me. It seems like a computer would be so logical that way. That mm-hmm. It makes no sense what Riker is doing. And for Data to be able to play along? I would say, you know, somebody behind him, or Troy, on the other hand, is prompting him off screen. No, wait. No, he's playing a game. He's running a game here. We need to, you know, follow his move. Because... far as Data's concerned, he was kidnapped, and now it sounds like he's been conditioned to be one of these bad guys. If mm-hmm. not, maybe he did it all along just to end up on that ship. How do we know? Riker didn't defect. So I'm surprised Data is able to play along like that.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, maybe the most likely thing to have been is, you know, Riker, you've defected, so we're now going to blow you up. So, yeah. But I'm glad that they don't do that, right? I enjoy this enough that this is the way that the episode should have gone.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's pretty good. It's pretty well calculated. So, so it happens. He taps in, and you know, Data says, "Why is he using his command codes? You know they're not valid." Oh, I get it now. Go ahead, drop shields. And of course, what's Worf doing? Oh, wait a minute here. What happened to the Klingon just doing what he's told? Does he do that to Picard? Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah, transmit the command codes to the Phoenix, to the Cardassian. You know, Captain, he will dismantle his shield. The Phoenix will not have a chance. Well, as we find out later, the Phoenix obviously had a chance. Doesn't matter if shields or no shields. They still kick the Cardassian's ass to the afterlife. But, yeah, I mean, Worf back there, it's amazing. Nobody else will do that. The little ensign in the front isn't going to say, but, Captain, are you sure you want to go there? But Worf, on the other hand,
sir, that makes no sense. Rethink what you're saying.
Is Worf a team player or what? But, okay. But after, and that's it, a couple arguments. He argues with Data. And, you know, finally he does what he says to do. And what happens? That's the first thing that happens. Boom! They fire on the Enterprise and hit that starboard nacelle. And then it's frozen to be continued next week.
Okay, there are a couple of things I have to say about this now. The ending really, 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 really sucks. Because no one believes for a second that Riker has destroyed the Enterprise or shot the Enterprise or done anything at all. So, this isn't a Mr. Worf fire cliffhanger moment, right? And they should acknowledge that they don't have the attention, they don't have the suspense. They haven't earned the suspense to be able to pin it and say, you know, continues mm-hmm. next time. You know, they don't have that. They should have made it so they disappeared, they got away. And if the last thing they say is like, you know, oh, they could come up with a different line to end it, where they're not insulting the intelligence of the audience who think that Riker might have blown up the ship. Of course, he hasn't blown up the ship, and right. they don't need to end it this way. The other thing I'm going to moan about now is that this episode, and this goes for any episode that does this, by the way. This episode starts. And the title shown on this episode, right at the beginning, is Gambit Part 1.
Yeah.
I do not want to be told that this is Gambit Part 1. I want to be told that this is Gambit. Mm-hmm. And when you hit the end, because let's say that you're trying to build up a bit of tension towards the end, thinking, oh, are they going to be able to wind this up in a few minutes? And they then want to do one of these swerves where effectively you pause the episode and you leave on a bit of suspenseful cliffhanger. There's nothing there if you've already told me that you're going to pause the episode halfway through. So you know that there's going to be the cliffhanger, and the cliffhanger they choose hasn't earned it through any kind of suspense. So I have big problems with the fact that they apparently think that we're idiots and that this is something that is going to get us, you know, overly excited. And it's too telegraphed that it's too obvious in my mind. And that's really the only, you know, this thing and then the starting scene with them in the bar are really my only like negative marks against this episode.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Alright, well then. Let's see. I guess that's pretty much it. Hopefully I didn't miss too much.
What will happen next week? What will happen next week?
I don't know. Maybe Picard or Riker may not make it off that ship, man. That'd be really bad if they didn't, but I'll hold hope for that they do. Alright. Mm-hmm. Well then, I guess it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I'm going to go first. It's too many unanswered questions, so we're going to need part 2 to solve this. What exactly are they trying to... Okay, so I said carbon date, but you used another one. What was it? Quantum date?
Yeah, in Enterprise, they do quantum dating as a way to find out how... Is it how old things are? Yeah, they scan, for example, they scan technology from the future. You know, they have the temporal Cold War episodes that go through the series. They've got this ability to scan something and say, "Ooh, this is from the 29th century," and things like that. So, yeah, they've got quantum dating, apparently.
Okay, all right. So, quantum dating, what's it for? What's it going to do? What are they going to do with it? Maybe we'll find out in the next episode, because honestly, I really don't know how this will end. And I mean that sincerely. This is one of those episodes that I'm just so uninterested about, I guess. Or not so. Okay. You know, this isn't a Shades of Grey thing. But, or, well, I can't remember that one that I pretty much phoned that one in with the bugs that were on the terraforming planet, and they didn't ugly bags of mostly water thing. You remember that one?
Yeah. Too short a season, that one, or no? That's the child, not the child. The evolution.
Yeah. Yes. There we go. And I don't think there was an episode I was so more unimpressed with than that. Because I was almost catatonic during that episode, that podcast, because it just didn't touch me at all, except for the wrong ways. Bad touch. So, unanswered questions such as, how did Picard get off the ship? Where was he going? Was he supposedly going to Risa? Did he get abducted along the way? How did he end up in this bar? Did Starfleet know he was going to investigate this band of mercenaries? What was he doing? And why did the bad guys trust him so easily and, you know, so quickly? Well, they trust him, but they don't trust him. There's a love-hate relationship going on. So there's a human that they just picked up from that bar. All of a sudden, they abduct another human. My guess is he told them, this is the person you want to get. And they got him. How did all that come about? How would Picard even know Riker was going to be looking for him in the bar? Well, then again, he probably knows Riker would be the one to come looking for him and trying to figure out how it happened. So that makes more sense. But still, what was Picard doing there to begin with? How long has he been off the ship? Has he been gone for a month or a day or a week? And they didn't even just give a little dialogue at the beginning. You know, our friend, he's been missing for 4 weeks. Where is he? Or this guy, when did he impregnate your sister? 2 weeks ago. I don't know. It's a silly black cover story, the whole thing. The alien who's sitting there being told shut your mouth by another alien still is going to start talking. I do like Riker and Picard's plan, but for me, Riker and Picard meet up with each other too late in the episode to really save it for me. I don't know what part two is. I know that they're going to obviously continue with the phaser fire. But how will it end? I don't know. Maybe at the last second, Wrecker will come through and, change a condition that could have destroyed all of human history or something. Or at least the Enterprise. And we'll see. So what does it give for me? I put down here too. I don't think it really, talking about it made it all that much better to give it a 3. So, yeah, it didn't change me this time. So I'm going to stick with my 2. So, Doc?
Okay. I hear everything you're saying, but isn't it fun and a bit of a mystery and it's kind of like a silly romp, right? I like the fact that Data's in charge. I like the fact that it is nonsense that Picard's dead and he's also they then lose Riker, and apparently Starfleet is still happy with these guys under Data's command wandering around the place. I thought that it is also the crew, the criminal crew are clearly incompetent and they've got it coming. And I do kind of vaguely remember how this one ends, and it's a bit of a isn't this one the end? This is the all you need is love ending, right? With the Vulcan / Romulan in the final scene, I think. I enjoy it. I don't know. I'm giving this one like a 4 out of 5. I think this is like a wonderful fun. I think that they're building something up. But where they leave us is not great. But I kind of, it's very easy to digest this episode. I just enjoy it, and I think it's a bit of a guilty pleasure on my side. Now, I'm certain that the second part is not going to be as good, but I like this one, and I don't really know what. I don't think it deserves the hate. So, we'll see how it gets wrapped up next week. I feel kind of warmth towards this episode.
Okay. All right, then. Well, then, guys, that brings us to the end. So join us next time as we review episode number 5, and that will be Gambit Part 2. Thank you for downloading and listening to tonight's show, and take care and good night.
Good night.
Good night.